October, we're thankful, we're always thankful. We're miserable in September, but when it gets to October, we're very thankful. I'm joking. This whole year, we're asking the question, what does it look like to build communities? September, we're looking at the month of welcome, and now we're into Thanksgiving. What does it look like to be? October has generally been, in the life of the church, the month of Thanksgiving. We'll look at that a little while later. Last week, we heard from the Casey Strine, who's awesome, who was wearing a dicky bow, who, I mean, just, if you listen to his talk, which I highly recommend, just picture the guy looking absolutely pristine, incredible. And he brought a really powerful message, encouraging us to locate our story in God's big story, the story of Scripture, and the story of the Spirit of God birthing the church, and that the one day the reality is that Jesus will return. We are part of God's transforming presence called the church, and he hasn't given up with us. More people are coming to faith in Jesus now than any other time in the world. We are born at this time for such a time as this. It is an exciting time to be alive. And so today, we are going to think about generosity. What does it mean to be generous? There should be a slide with generosity on it. There you go, generous. That's big letters because we are called to be generous. I started university 20 years ago. I was very gifted. I was 4. Thank you. So I feel old when I look out at you guys. One of the things struck me about university was this. I went to the University of Hull. Thank you. As Edmund Blackadder says, there are 3 good colleges in England, Oxford, Cambridge, and Hull. People say when you start Hull University, your first question when you arrive is, where was your first choice university? Mine was Leeds. They didn't let me, and I'm just about over that. So I didn't live in halls because Leeds was my first choice. I lived in the city. I lived in a house. There was 10 of us packed into a terraced house. And I was sharing a room. Mercifully, God was good, and he's a brilliant guy called Martin. We got on fantastically. But it's really interesting when you go to university for the first time because you meet people, there's guys in our house, different parts of the world, different parts of the country, and you very quickly see people's quirks, don't you? The way people are going to operate, you're kind of thinking, am I going to get on with this person? Am I not going to get on with this person? And what was fairly clear was the issue was of generosity became a challenge fairly early on. There were 2 particular people in my house in first year. One was a guy called Ben. Ben had a limit of spending, he would only spend £5 a day. He wouldn't go over. Now, this is 20 years ago, okay? So that included bus fare, whatever he was going to do. He would only spend £5. And what he would do is if he didn't have quite enough food, he'd nick your food. I remember there's a big argument about 4 weeks into university life where a guy called Richard, who was cool, was like, who's opened my cheese? And he just kicked off over cheese because this guy, Ben, was tucking into his cheese, said, well, I spent my £5, you know. Well, don't buy your own flipping cheese, mate. God bless you. And then there was Kevin. Now, Kevin's diet consisted of fried sausages and pot noodles. Not together. One day he'd have a pot noodle, the next day he'd have sausages. But bizarrely, Kevin kept all of his stuff in his bedroom. Didn't want anyone else to touch his stuff, especially his frying pan. He was particularly sensitive about his frying pan. And every day, most days he would walk down with his frying pan, which he kept in his room. And then he would get the sausages, which he'd hidden from Ben, because if Ben had spent his £5, he might tuck into Kevin's sausages. And Kevin had pot noodles, and he had sausages. Most days, Kevin would be sat there frying sausages on the cooker. Literally, most days, that's what he did. When his parents came up to see him. Now, I'm of a different generation. I'm what's called, they call a Gen Xer, okay? Which means that I would phone my parents once a week because there were no mobile phones. If you can imagine, there was a time, there was a pay phone in our house. A pay phone is like an old-fashioned phone you put money in. And when somebody calls you, there's a pips. There's just kind of these weird... So when parents came to visit, that was always dead awkward and slightly embarrassing. But when Kevin's parents came to visit him, there was this awesome moment where they'd been out for the day and they came back and Kevin walked into the communal area holding this brand new Teflon frying pan. I mean, he loved it. And he looked after it, and he kept it in his room, and then he'd come out with his cookie sausages with this beautiful Teflon frying pan, and he washed it. It was immaculate. One day, we noticed that Kevin had a moment where he was a little bit absent-minded, and he'd left his frying pan in the kitchen. Now, I like a little bit of banter. I've got a lot better as I've got older. And I said to my roommate, Martin, let's hide his frying pan. And he said, what a great idea. I said, well, let's hide it so we won't find it. Through the kitchen, there was a toilet, an old-fashioned toilet with a cistern on the top. So I thought, let's hide the frying pan on the top of the cistern. Great idea. And then we went about and forgot about the frying pan. When we came back the next day or a few days after, there was an official lady from the university. Because the cleaner had been in and she'd been cleaning and she was cleaning the toilet. And she pulls the chain. The arm of the toilet lifts up. Kevin's frying pan comes flying down and it literally just skimmed her nose. Kevin's frying pan hits the edge of the toilet and it dents his Teflon frying pan. It was a nightmare with this very official lady, a whole lady, so you did not mess with her, was coming to deal with what had happened. So Martin, my esteemed roommate, totally blamed me, and I then had to explain why I thought it was a good idea and it wasn't a personal issue, that we weren't trying to attack or kill or cause some kind of issues to the lovely, lovely cleaner. And then had to explain to Kevin that we'd dented his frying pan. There was a lot of F words and none of them were faith, it's fair to say. Generosity. You see, in that first year, we saw there were some people who would share their stuff, some people who wouldn't share their stuff. And we've all met people who hold on to their respective frying pans, who won't let people share their stuff. And maybe there is an inner Kevin in all of us that wants to hold on to the stuff that we've got. Maybe that's you. Maybe you're a student and you're at university here and you store your frying pan in your room. I'm not judging you. That's absolutely fine. Just don't leave it out there because somebody could play a prank on you. Generosity. It's interesting because generosity is a question that we are thinking about as a nation. We are heading into some unprecedented political change. Brexit. Whether you voted for Brexit, whether you're a Remainer, Remainiac, Remona, or a Brexiteer, whatever, there is a question that has been asked in our culture about what does it look like for us to be generous? Are we generous? When the leader of the free world can openly mock a woman who has given evidence in a Senate committee and wants to build a wall, in our geopolitical culture that we see before us, has generosity been lost? Most of the conversations I have with people at school gates, many of them are about Brexit. And the thing that people say is, we're changing, and I'm worried that we're no longer a nation that is generous. Are we generous? What does the Bible have to say about generosity? And what can we learn about generosity today? And can we make a difference? We are looking at Acts chapter 4. I'm going to read that to us. The words will appear on the screen. This is a Message translation of the Bible. Brilliant translation. The whole congregation of believers was united as one heart, one mind. They didn't even claim ownership of their own possessions. No one said, that's mine, you can't have it. They shared everything. The apostles gave powerful witness to the resurrection of the Master Jesus, and grace was on all of them. So it turned out that not a person among them was needy. Those who owned fields or houses sold them
and brought the price of the sale to the apostles and made an offering of it. The apostles then distributed it according to each person's need. Joseph, called by the apostles Barnabas, which means son of comfort, a Levite born in Cyprus, sold a field that he owned, bought the money, and made an offering of it to the apostles. If you've been coming along to STC over the last few weeks, you'll notice that in the first evening gathering, my colleague Bryony spoke on a passage from Acts chapter 2, the end of Acts chapter 2, that almost mirrors what we've read today. And that's deliberate. Luke, who wrote Acts, he wrote Gospel Luke, was a doctor, has been describing the life of the early church. And we've heard about Peter and John, who have been arrested. And they are now back of returned to the church. And it's absolutely remarkable. There is a commonality that no political system can get close to. Some read this passage and say, well, it speaks of socialism, or it speaks of communism. And what? And some read it and sing, oh, Jeremy Corbyn. It speaks of an equality, of no one holding on to their stuff, of a sharing. Frying pans would have been shared around, no problem. The reason being that when people came to faith, when women came to faith, it often meant leaving behind their families, their source of incomes. When men came to faith, if they worked in the family business and they were rejected by their families for the decision they made for Jesus, they lost everything. And so the church took on the responsibility of providing for the poor. We can never, ever lose sight of the poor. We are called to love and to cherish and serve the poor. And there is something beautiful. There is something beautiful in this. Because people looking at the way these guys would have lived would have thought, you know, there's something powerful here. That people will say sometimes that the Bible doesn't say anything to life. Do you know, I'd say, read it. Because if you look at the Old Testament, and you look at the law in the Old Testament, you begin to see that the vision that God had for his people, Israel, was that the stranger would be welcomed. That those are seeking asylum, seeking refuge from violence, would be made welcome amongst God's people. That so much so that farmers, when you go out and do stuff with the land, you leave a bit so that people who have nothing can come and have something. That every Jewish person would give a minimum of 10% to God. The first fruits, it's called. You give him the first fruits. And then we give to the poor. And then right here in Acts, recorded to us from Luke, is people watching this would see a vision that God had planted 2,000 years before, of what it would look like when God's people got together and loved him. It would look beautiful, powerful. And it wasn't a top-down political thing. It was by the Spirit of God. It was a voluntary thing. And then it focuses in on a man called Barnabas. It was actually, his real name is Joseph. Now, let me ask this question. Anybody like sport here? Raise a hand. Yeah? Some people are not sure. Let's ask you again. Do you like sport? Yes or no? It's not a trick question. That's fine. Who's here heard of Eldrick Woods? Eldrick Woods. Okay, it's one person at the back. Yeah? Very good. Don't shout it out. Eldrick Woods. Okay, who's heard of Tiger Woods? The golfer. Yeah? Now, some people are not sure. Tiger Woods, very famous golfer. His real name is Eldrick Woods. But his nickname is Tiger. But we all know him as Tiger, right? So, you with me? Yeah? Everyone cool? Perfect. Just checking. No sleeping. Now, Barnabas, son of encouragement. You see, he has been named by the early church as a man who is an encourager. It seems a bit soft to be known as an encourager. I want to be known as a hard man. Anointed speaker. Worship leader. son of encouragement. Do you know, behind every significant move of God, this is my humble opinion, is a massive, significant heart of generosity and significant people who encourage. There's a man called Bill Johnson who leads a church in California. And he says, if you want to have courage, you need encouragement. And there's a man called Paul who writes, I think, over a third of the New Testament, one of the most prolific church planters of all time. You heard of him, right? Who's heard of St. Paul? Yeah, let's raise a hand, okay. Some people have not heard of St. Paul, or they're just too cool to raise a hand. That's fine. I'm not judging you, but I'm watching some of you back, okay. Barnabas. Barnabas is the guy, the kind of name, we know his name, but we don't know huge amounts about him. But he's a son of encouragement. He has a heart of generosity. He's the one who raises up Paul. He leaves a legacy in Paul, one of the most prolific church planters. And he sells some land, presumably in Cyprus, where he's from, and he's embracing the Jewish custom of giving. Somehow, the Spirit of God have got hold of his heart, and he sold a field. You wouldn't store money in a pension scheme. You wouldn't store money in a bank. There weren't really banks. You would store money in one of two things, homes or livestock or some kind of farming. So he takes everything. He takes his nest egg. He takes the thing that's going to see him through retirement. And Jesus gets hold of him to such a degree, he's just like, I just want to bless what God is doing in this early church. So I'm going to sell the land and I'm just going to place it at the apostles' feet. Just take it. I'm going to look to God to provide for me. I'm not going to look back to that nest egg. Take it. A heart of generosity. I want to say to you, if you want to make an impact, be an encourager. And an encourager is somebody with a heart of generosity. First thing, I want to say three simple things. Firstly, words have power. You know the old thing from school? Sticks and stones may break your bones, yeah? But names will never hurt you. Did they say that when you... They did when I... Because I'm so old. Because we didn't have Instagram or social media, which would have been a killer for me, I'm telling you. When I was a child, my daughter said to me recently, we were watching Strictly Come Dancing. Any fans here? Yes, thank you. Oh, yeah, a bit more response to that. Well, when they're introducing the characters, there was an older lady who was kind of sharing her story, a backstory, and she said, oh, when I hit 50, I gained a lot of weight, I lost a lot of confidence. And my daughter said, Daddy, that sounds like you. I was greatly blessed by that, as you can imagine. Thank you, my love. Words have power. Words have power. I did have a little pray. Walked the dog. I thought, is that true, Lord? No, I'm not 50. It's okay. Maybe it might be some truth in the other stuff. I'm not sure. Words have power. God speaks and creation comes into being. As his people... Imagine if we took on this took on the reality that our words have power. So we are heading into October. It's a month of Thanksgiving, and we decided to say thank you to everybody we met. Thank you for being a great housemate. Thank you for lending me your frying pan. Do you know what I really love about you is this? What I see in you is this. Do you know when you do this, I just want to honor that. When we thank people, we honor them. When we honor people, it's one of the greatest gifts. And when we encourage them, it's as if the words of God are resting on somebody. It can bring stuff out of people in a world of negativity, in a world of fear, and a world where people can check social media and check social media and feel bad about themselves. We, as God's people, kingdom people, can be the people that bring life. You know, like when you're with somebody who is just really miserable. There are some people that can just kill the atmosphere. They don't try. It's just a gift that they have. We all know them, and we try and avoid them in Jesus' name. But what if we took on the calling of generosity and decided to speak life, to communicate what God has done in us, through our words. The second thing is this, generous actions. I had a friend from my previous church in Cambridge, 4 kids, really, really, really busy job. Very, very, very stressful job, very busy job. And he began to feel a little bit challenged that God was calling him to do mission and evangelism. And he was like, blimey, I've got 4 kids. Where am I going to do it? Where am I going to fit it in? Oh, no, I'm figuring people like me who work one day a week, telling guys like him who work 5 days a week, do mission. He's like, oh, what do I do? What do I do? And he had a brainwave one day. So it's a Friday. He's working away with his team. And he's like, you know, he just felt that he'd been a bit harsh on his team. And he had a moment where he went outside to this little kind of French cafe thing. It was like one of these pop-up cafes. And he bought everybody croissant and he bought coffee. And he said, guys, let's down till. And they're like, are you sure? You're not going to bite our heads off? He said, no. And he said, I just want to thank you for just being an amazing team. And this is just a simple gift to bless you. And you know, he said in that moment, they started to connect with one another and talk about stuff in a way that they don't normally. And this guy pipes up and he says, my wife's about to have our first baby in about 2 weeks' time. And they're like, oh, yeah, is it 2 weeks? Fantastic. And he says, and we're moving house tomorrow. And my mate Will says, oh, you got the removal? He says, no, I'm doing it myself. That is male logic right there, isn't it? He had taken it upon himself to hire a van, but he hadn't got anybody to help him. So my mate Will says, well, I'll come help you. And to the other guys, his colleagues are like, yeah, we'll come and help you. And so my friend Will, who's got a busy job, he's got 4 kids, says, I'm going to give up Saturday. I'm going to come and I'm going to help you. And they move this guy in. And the guy is blown away. And he's buys him brownie points with his wife, and he wasn't sleeping with the dog that night because he hadn't sorted the moving out. Just one thing. A generous action opened up more generous action. And then Will got opportunity to say that he was going to church tomorrow and communicate something of God's heart in that moment. Hands up if you're a student. There's a lot of students here. What if we just got excited about kindness and generosity? Just think what we could do. Or just think tomorrow when you go into the workplace and when you're going into school. I mean, how you've got to work that one out. How you do all that stuff and remain cool, I don't know. Jacob, show us how it's done. But where are the places of need that just a simple act of generosity could sow such phenomenal kingdom breakthrough in somebody's life? You buy somebody a coffee, God can bless that, and a door can be opened into somebody's heart. Next thing, generous hearts, please. Generous hearts. We are called to live generous lives. I'm not going to tell you today, you must give 10% of your income. You must give lots of money. I'm not going to do that. What I am going to say is that if you're here tonight and you know and love Jesus, I'm just going to remind us that he's got a book out. He's got a book out. And it's a good idea for us to read it. And if we read it, there's a challenge about what we do with our money. And I don't want to guilt trip anybody, because I'll guilt trip you, and it doesn't make any difference. But if you know Jesus, and you say that you follow him, he's going to have something to say about giving. I listened to a man yesterday at a conference. He's a bishop in London. And he said, I'll tell you what you believe if you show me your bank account. Oh, no. Wow. How challenging is that? but I think there's some truth in it. But generosity isn't, there's a brilliant leader that I follow, a guy called Paul Scanlon. I watch all his stuff on YouTube. I follow him on Instagram. We're like best friends. He just hasn't met me yet, but I'm sure we get on really well. And he says this, and I think it's true. Generosity is not God's way of raising money. It's about raising sons and daughters. Generosity is about learning to rely on him, God, to trust him, and to give him everything that we have, because he owns it anyway. So how do we do all this? You see, next slide, please, if we can. Here's the thing. I could say to you today, be generous. And you could be like, oh, I'm just going to be generous. I've got to be generous. I remember a time when we lived in Cambridge and we were burgled. Somebody got into the house at night. My trusty black Labrador saw them off. Praise God. Policeman comes to see us, taking a statement. My daughter is probably about 2.5 at the time. She takes herself to the toilet. And with the policeman's sat, so we sat at our dining room table and he's writing notes. And and children, if you have children, you can testify this. When they're of a certain age, they give you a commentary about what they're doing on the toilet. So it starts off like this. The policeman didn't say anything, neither did I. We just carried on. Daddy, I'm having a poo. He didn't say anything. He said, do you want to? I said, yes. We'll just deal with that. She, bless her, she was forcing it out for England. God. Dealt with it, went back. You can't force generosity. I didn't mean that. Oh. Now, when I practiced talking to the dog, he did not have that response, I have to say. You see, if we try and force generosity, then very soon, in a matter of days or whatever, it begins to wane and you begin to think, well, they never do anything for me. Why do I have to do it for them? Today, I'm going to be generous. Oh, yes. Today I'm going to be generous. But here's the thing. The source of generosity is Jesus. He is the one who pours out everything upon us. He is the one who gave his own life so that we could have total freedom. You get the beautiful image in Luke chapter 15 of the running father who just lavishes his love on his son. That's the love that God has for us. And I don't know whether you're here tonight and you're not sure of that love. We'd love to talk to you, if that's the case, to share some of the hope that we have. Or you've come to university. When I went to university, I made a decision in my heart to not go to church. I'd been grown up a Christian, I thought, I'm just not going to go to church. I'm just going to try what it's like not to be a Christian for a bit. The Lord had other ideas. Helpful Christians, being generous, helped me move in. Do you want to come to church? My parents are standing there. Yes, I'll come to church. Okay. And that was it. But maybe you're back today. And you're thinking, oh, I'm not sure. I've done some stuff I wish I hadn't done. Jesus is in... God is the definition of generosity. He is the author of generosity. And we see that supremely in Jesus. And today he says, you are welcome home. We are called to share generosity. Let's have the next slide, please, if we can. I love this. Proverbs 11:24. The world of the generous gets larger and larger. The world of the stingy gets smaller and smaller. I want to leave us with this question. What kind of life do you want? And it says a big, a kind of, a kind of big question, but it's a good question. What kind of life do you want? When you get older and you look back, what kind of life do you want? Do you want a larger life? Do you want a smaller life? No one says, do you know, when I hit 50, I just want to be really bitter. There's nothing on telly. Let's give bitterness a go. Or I'm just going to be really mean and negative and cynical. Life can do that to us. So let me ask you this question. What kind of life do you want? Let's have the next slide, please. I want to finish with this story. This is Mary. This is Mary Holland. She's my friend from my previous church. Now, she's not looking her best in this picture. She's now with Jesus. I got the privilege of taking her funeral. I want to tell you a little bit about Mary. Mary was a teacher. She lived all around the world. She lived in Hong Kong. She worked with a lady called Jackie Pullinger. She never married. She never had a family, but she was a lady of phenomenal generosity. This is Mary in Addenbrooke's Hospital. It's a photograph taken by the police. Mary was in Sainsbury's. Mary was a teacher. She's old school. And she sees a child messing around. So Mary did what they did in them old days. And she says to the child, stop messing about. The mother took exception to this and beat Mary to such a degree that she fractured her eye sockets, broke ribs, broke her arm, and put her into hospital. This faithful saint, a lady of generosity, a lady who'd spent her life serving Jesus. It's all on CCTV. The woman is caught, and she's arrested, and she's going to court. She's in a Crown Court. It's quite a serious charge, and the police say she's going to probably go to prison because there are other offences to take into consideration. In the trial, it's looking more and more likely like the lady's going to be sent down. Mary writes a note. She passes it to the judge. Could she say a few words? Before the summing up, Mary is invited to stand. She's 86 at this point. She lifts herself up. And she says, prison is no place for a mother. She said, I follow Jesus, and I believe in forgiveness. He has forgiven me, so I forgive her. Please don't send her to prison. Wow. The judge takes that into consideration. The woman gets a suspended sentence. Mary goes outside the court. There's a number of national newspapers outside. She makes a statement. She says, I've spent my life visiting people in prison. It's no place for women. I believe in Jesus. He's been good to me. He's forgiven me. So I now forgive this lady. She can be free. There's a man who says this. Every contact leaves a trace. It's inspired by a man called Lockhart, who was a French guy who's the kind of father of forensic science. Every contact leaves a trace. Every contact leaves a trace. A generous generosity brings life. Mary Holland was a woman of phenomenal generosity. She didn't have a family, but her funeral was packed of people that she had invested her life in over many years. So what kind of life do you want? If you want a life of impact, then generosity is the leading beat. And we receive God's generosity in Jesus. And I want to ask this two very quick things. Today, do you need to receive afresh God's generosity in your life? Do you need to hear his words of forgiveness in your life? Do you need to hear his words of love for you afresh? Do you need to say sorry to him for something? And secondly, this question, where can you share his generosity? In 2 weeks' time, we have an opportunity here at church to be generous. I'd encourage everybody here to do that. But this week alone, where can you share that generosity?